Hi, Gerwyn Jones here, and welcome to another edition of From the Bookshelf. Today we are continuing to read from The Motorcycle Diaries, A Journey Around South America by Ernesto Che Guevara, translated by Anne Wright and published by Verso in 1995. This was a new stage in our adventure. We were used to attracting idle attention with our strange garb and the prosaic figure of La Poderosa II, whose asthmatic wheezing aroused pity in our hosts. At the same time, we had been, so to speak, gentlemen of the road. We belonged to a time-honoured aristocracy of wayfarers, bearing our degrees as visiting cards to impress people. Not any more. Now we were just two tramps with packs on our backs and the grime of the road encrusted in our overalls, shadows of our former aristocratic selves. The lorry driver had dropped us in the upper part of Varapaiso on the way in, and we wearily dragged our packs down the street, followed by the amused or indifferent glances of passers-by. In the distance, boats glimmered enticingly in the harbour, while the sea, black and welcoming, cried out to us with a grey smell which swelled our nostrils. We bought bread which seemed so expensive at the time, but proved cheap as we ventured further north, and kept walking downhill. Alberto was obviously tired, and although I tried not to show it, I was just as weary. So when we found a lorry park, we besieged the attendant with gruesome details of the hardships we had suffered on the long road from Santiago. He let us sleep on some boards, accompanied by parasites whose name ends in homines, but at least we had a roof over our heads. Single-mindedly, we set about falling asleep. News of our arrival, however, had reached the ears of a fellow countryman in a scruffy little café next to the lorry park, and he wanted to meet us. Meeting in Chile means hospitality, and neither of us was in a position to turn down this manna from heaven. Our compatriot proved to be deeply imbued with the spirit of the Sisterland and was completely pie-eyed. I hadn't eaten fish for ages, and the wine was so delicious, and our host so attentive. Anyway, we ate well, and he invited us to his house the following day. The Café La Gioconda opened its doors early, and we brewed our mate, chatting to the owner, who was very interested in our journey. After that, we went off to explore the city. Valparaiso is very picturesque. Built overlooking a large bay, as it grew, it clambered up the hills which sweep down to the sea. Its strange corrugated iron architecture, arranged on a series of tiers, linked by winding flights of steps and funiculars, has its madhouse museum beauty, heightened by the contrast of different coloured houses mingling with the leaden blue of the bay. As if patently dissecting, we pry into dirty stairways and dark recesses, talking to the swarms of beggars. We plumb the city's depths, the miasmas to which we are drawn. Our dilated nostrils inhale the poverty with sadistic intensity. We went to the ships down at the docks to see if any were going to Easter Island, but the news wasn't very encouraging. No boats were going there in the next 6 months. We got some vague details about flights which left once a month. Easter Island, our imaginations soar, then stop and circle around. Over there, having a white boyfriend is an honour. You don't have to work. The women do everything. You just eat, sleep, and keep them happy. This wonderful place, where the weather is ideal, the women ideal, the food ideal, the work ideal, in its blissful non-existence. Who cares if we stay there a year? Who cares about studying, work, family, etc.? In a shop window, an enormous lobster winks at us, and from its bed of lettuce, its whole body tells us, I'm from Easter Island, where the weather is ideal, the women are ideal. We were waiting patiently in the door of La Gioconda Café for our compatriot to show up, when the owner invited us in out of the sun and treated us to one of his magnificent lunches of fried fish and watery soup. We never heard from the Argentine again while we were in Valparaiso, but we became great friends with the owner of the bar. He was a strange sort of guy, indolent and enormously generous at all the odds and sods who turned up, but he made normal customers pay through the nose for the rubbish he sold in his place. We didn't pay a cent the whole time we were there, and he lavished hospitality on us. Today it's your turn, tomorrow it's mine, was his favourite saying, not very original, but very effective. We tried to contact the doctors from Petrohuey, but back at work with no time to waste, they never agreed to meet us, formally. At least we knew more or less where they were. That afternoon we went our separate ways. Alberto followed up the doctors, while I went to see an old woman with asthma, a customer from La Gioconda. The poor thing was in an awful state, breathing the smell of stale sweat and dirty feet that filled her room, mixed with the dust from a couple of armchairs, the only luxuries in the house. As well as asthma, she had a bad heart. It's in cases like this, when a doctor knows he is powerless in such circumstances, that he longs for change. A change which would prevent the injustice of a system in which a month ago this poor old woman had to earn her living as a waitress, wheezing and panting, but facing life with dignity. In these circumstances, people in poor families who can't pay their way are surrounded by an atmosphere of barely disguised acrimony. They stop being father, mother, sister, or brother and become a purely negative factor in the struggle for life, and by extension, a source of bitterness for the healthy members of the community who resent their illness as if it were a personal insult to those who have to support them. It is, then, in the end, for people whose horizons never reach beyond tomorrow, that we see the profound tragedy which circumscribes the life of the proletariat the world over. In these dying eyes there is a humble appeal for forgiveness, and also often a desperate plea for solace which is lost in the world, just as their body will soon be lost in the vast mystery surrounding us. How long this present order, based on an absurd idea of caste, will last, I can't say. But it's time for governments spent less time publicizing their own virtues and more money, much more money, funding socially useful projects. There wasn't much I could do for the sick woman. I simply advised her on her diet and prescribed a diuretic and some asthma pills. I had a few Dramamine tablets left and I gave one of them to her. As I went out, I was followed by the old dear's fawning words and the family's indifferent gaze. Alberto had tracked down the doctor. We had to be at the hospital at 9 the following morning. The reception from the doctors wasn't over-friendly, but we got what we wanted, an introduction to Molinas Luco, mayor of Valparaiso. We took our leave with all of the required formalities and went to the town hall. Our scruffy appearance didn't impress the man at the desk, but he'd had orders to let us in. The secretary showed us copies of a letter replying to ours, explaining that our project was impossible since the ownership to Easter Island had left, and there wasn't another for a year. We were ushered into the sumptuous office of Dr. Molinas Luco, who received us very cordially. He gave the impression, however, of being in a play, and was very careful with his diction. He only became enthusiastic when he talked about Easter Island, which he had wrested from the English by proving it belonged to Chile. He recommended we keep up with events and promised to take us next year. I may not be here exactly, but I'm still president of the Friends of Easter Island Society, he said. As we went out, the man in the desk told us to take our dog with us, and to our amazement showed us a puppy which had relieved itself on the lobby carpet and was gnawing at a chair leg. The dog had probably followed us, attracted by a hobo look, and the doorman had imagined it was just another accessory of our outlandish attire. Anyway, the poor animal, deprived of the bond linking him to us, got a good kick in the bum and was thrown out howling. Still, it was good to know that some living thing's well-being depended on our patronage. We were determined to avoid the desert in the north of Chile by going by sea, so we went around the shipping companies trying to get a free passage to one of the northern ports. In one of them, the captain promised to take us if the maritime authorities gave us permission to work on our passage. The reply was negative, of course, and we were back at square one. Alberto suddenly informed me of his heroic decision. We'd sneak on the boat and hide in the hold. It would be best to do this at night, persuade the sailor on duty, and see what happened. We fetched our bags, clearly too many for this particular plan. After saying goodbye with great regret to our friends, we went through the main gates of the port and, burning our boats, so to speak, set off on our maritime adventure. And that's it for today from me on From the Bookshelf. I'm Germán Jones.